Welcome to the Hotel Analyst Podcast, your regular dose of 20 minutes or so of our thoughts on matters of the moment in and around the hotel investment space. My name's Chris Bowne, the editor at Hotel Analyst, and I'm joined by my regular partner on the podcast, Andrew Sangster, the editorial director of Hotel Analyst. And we're going to start this week with a report from Andrew, because he's been to the annual hotel industry shindig in Europe, the Berlin event called IF, and here he is to tell us all about what the mood was once he got to Berlin.
Yes, so the International Hospitality Investment Forum, which was in mid-April this year, having been in mid-May. I have to say, Berlin in May is better than Berlin in April. And there is talk it's going back even earlier in the year, next year, so be even chillier. There's a bit of a mea culpa I'm going to start with, because last year I came back, and maybe it was the sunshine, maybe it was the Berliner Pilsner, but I was overly optimistic and thinking, oh, we're going to have a great second half of 2023. And as it turned out, the H2 23 was as bad as H2 22. And one of the, normally there's a bit of a pickup towards the end of the year, but there was nothing like that last year. So I have got extra levels of skepticism while attending this year's event, and I'm struggling in light of how I, you know, where I went wrong last year, to see why it's going to be any better this year. Now, there are a few processes underway which will test the transaction market, and we've written about, you know, how Starwood Capital's come out at the beginning of this year with the Edwardian deal, and there's a few other things happening which it's a little bit promising, but I still just am not seeing why the whole transaction market is going to be unlocked. And I started my piece with a commentary saying, well, look, there's a duality here in the hotel investment market. We've got super duper trading. That trading slightly, you know, there's a few sort of moments of hesitation around that, but broadly speaking, I don't think anybody's seeing trading collapse. Alongside that, the other side of that, rather, is the very difficult transaction market. You know, it's sort of at all-time lows, pretty much. There are no obvious catalysts for that to change right now. It's going to get a bit better. I mean, debt costs are going to get a bit better. The bid-ask spread will reduce a little bit. There's a little bit more availability of debt, but not huge amounts. And what debt is available is coming at quite a cost. It's the challenge of banks and it's the debt funds. And fundamentally, you've got a situation where private equity can make its returns by lending money rather than by buying stuff and being an equity investor. And I'm just not sure that we're going to see the transaction market really get moving until private equity is of the view, actually, there's not much money to be made lending. We're going to have to get stuck in and start buying again. Now, an optimist would say, well, we can have other buyers out there. We can have trade buyers, and certainly the deals we're seeing at the moment are mostly trade buyers, Starwood Capital accepted. And certainly for the global brand majors are out there buying brands and doing deals on that front. But they will only be brands they'll be buying. They won't be buying the real estate piece. Which is the challenge. So you'll get something like the AJ deal, the Graduate Hotels deal that Hilton did, which we're about to go on and talk about. But it's hard to see, you know, the real estate component of that portfolio trading easily in the current environment. And I think the whole situation was summed up a little bit by Stephen Morita, who's managing director at Eastdil Secured. And during a session on debt, he said that that he sees the PE funds continuing to dabble in debt for the next couple of years or so. So that isn't a great situation, I'd suggest. Now, that aside, in terms of the overall market view, what we do have are very happy operators and, you know, very happy global brand majors in particular. They are continuing to do well. They're signing contracts. I sat down with Jean-Jacques Morin, the deputy CEO at Accor, for a separate conversation from the main events, and he was saying, well, look, half of our pipeline last year that was signed is conversions, and that doesn't require a huge amount of financing in terms of the, you know, to do the work for the conversion, and indeed, you know, compared to new build franchisee signings, obviously there's nowhere near the need for the financing for that either. So, you know, they can continue, the global brand majors can continue signing contracts, and indeed we write about the, again we're going to go on to talk about that, the deal with Novum Hospitality that IHG signed and was announced during IHIF. You know, these are significant moves and are going to you know, significantly extend the, you know, in IHG's case, its network in Germany. So, you know, good things are happening there. It's just this transaction market, which is still looking lackluster. And ultimately, I think, in terms of the, you know, even for the global brand majors, they do need the transaction market to start picking up again. So it's good, but not great, even from the global brand major perspective, and certainly from an investor, well, those investors who need to do deals to get paid, and their advisors, it's certainly a lot less than great at the moment.
Now, we've had some purchasing, some acquisitions by the big brand groups, two notable ones, Hilton, who've recently sort of seems to have changed their tune and are much more interested in doing acquisitions and partnerships. So Hilton has bought the Nomad lifestyle brand, and with it the brand's single launch hotel, which is in London. But they reckon they've got themselves a nice lifestyle brand they can quickly roll out to perhaps 100 hotels around the world, and it's going to beef up a bit of their portfolio that they felt was a bit weak and a bit lacking in activity. That's the lifestyle and boutique hotel segment. So excitement there. And then Wyndham, who of course for the last few months have been sitting on their hands while Choice was sniffing around them and potentially going to be taking them over. Now that's out of the way. They have been out and acquired another brand, and it's an extended stay brand, a kind of higher end extended stay brand called Waterwalk. Which has got a small number of sites in the US, but a brand that's quite interesting because it was developed originally by the kind of the daddy of long stay brands, a guy in the States, who Jack DeBoer, who has created a number of long stay brands that are now out there in the market and doing very well. And so the interesting thing for me about Waterwalk is that it's kind of got a bit of a mix in its properties. It's extended stay apartments, studios, but also it has a kind of slightly longer extended stay offering, which is unfurnished mini apartments. And so there's a bit of a crossover there between extended stay and mainstream rental properties. So Wyndham shifting gently in an interesting direction, just as Hilton are busy buying in brands to expand the lifestyle presence.
Yeah, I think there's a few things to comment on here with both Wyndham and Hilton in terms of the motivation and direction they're heading in with these acquisitions. But I think the first place to start is, let's tackle this, there are too many brands. Now, we've had this discussion a number of times on this podcast and in the pages of Hotel Analyst, or in the Pixels, I should say now these days, in Hotel Analyst, in HA perspective in particular. You know, I think we really need to, as an industry, try and put this discussion to bed. We have pointed out repeatedly, for example, that LVMH, Europe's most valuable company by market capitalization, seems to do pretty well despite having more than 75 brand houses, plus the near countless individual brands within these. Dimitri Menikis, President EMEA at Wyndham, told delegates at this year's IHIF that consumers will decide the future of brands, and he is right. The problem is that for hotel brand companies, owners are also customers. And, you know, as Dimitri said at IHIF again, he said owners are core, the essence for his company. And I think there is this, again, a sort of duality, I guess, where you've got the customers who are owners and the customers who are guests. And hotel brands are figuring out how to accommodate both sets of requirements. But the priority from a branding perspective has to lie with the customers, not with the owners. What we've historically had in the hotel sector is a somewhat bizarre idea where brands are trying to accommodate the needs of owners and looking at brands from the perspective of owners, and that has led to some strange situations, such as the idea that we need areas of protection that prevent brand companies from opening hotels close to each other. Now, what's bizarre about this is that you don't have to have a degree in economics to realize that concentrating brands in a specific location is going to lead to pricing power for those brands. So for hotel owners, actually, they're going to directly benefit the more brands that there are. If a single brand owner has more exposure in a specific location, that benefits the individual hotel owners in turn, because that brand company will actually start having pricing power. And I think it talks a little bit about how suspiciously property owners view hotel brand companies and the operators, that they'd rather have this sort of pseudo protection of being an exclusive property for a particular badge for a set geographic region, rather than seeking to genuinely maximize the economic return for the property. So we still got a bit of progress to make there, I think, in terms of what brands mean in the industry, and we need to certainly move beyond this discussion of there are too many brands. Now, I also said we were going to talk about Hilton in terms of, and I think the interesting thing to note with Hilton is, there's probably a couple of things, both in terms of the brands they're looking to buy, and we could certainly talk about how Hilton has finally got into the luxury lifestyle space, which is what Nomad is. I mean, even if it's only got effectively one hotel at the moment, but listeners who have been around the industry for a while remember the debacle that happened with regard to Hilton's most recent foray into the lifestyle space, which wasn't actually that recent, and that was back in 2008 when they had a go at launching Denizen. And Denizen was actually something cooked up by a group of people Hilton had hired out of Starwood Hotels, then separate from Marriott, and it led to a spectacular legal case that ended with a 2010 settlement that saw Hilton excluded from entering the lifestyle space until 2013. Now, I think given that it's now 10 years beyond this, I think we could safely say that Hilton has fulfilled its legal compliance with regard to that case. But it's interesting as it has actually taken that long for Hilton to really get going in this space. But they have, and that's good news for their shareholders, I would suggest. The other thing I think is interesting with Hilton is what they're doing in terms of partnerships on the experiential side. And this is a critical part of the whole loyalty platform. And, you know, these loyalty schemes are moving beyond simply being points, about points, and they're actually trying to be part of, you know, delivering experiences for members. And Hilton's is one of the biggest in the industry, alongside Marriott's, and it's expected to break through the 200 million member mark at some point this year. So it's a pretty big thing. And it's interesting also to see, you know, the small luxury hotels of the world relationship. We've written about that in, you know, a few weeks ago in Hotel Analyst when that deal was done, and of course the AutoCamp deal. And AutoCamp provide camping experiences at US national parks and other natural settings. So I think and what this is a brand extension, which, you know, is similar to the kind of stuff that Wyndham has now got stuck into. But I think, as you say, Chris, I think it's that Wyndham deal with Waterwalk, which is particularly interesting, given it speaks very much to this blurring of boundaries in the service living space, as we should call it. You know, whether it's built to rent or whatever you want to describe it as, multifamily, and various names for it, but Wyndham getting into that space, it's going to be quite interesting, because these other industries within the service living space, such as build to rent, such as the student housing, such as later living, they're really at the sort of infancy stage of branding, and hoteliers are much more advanced with their loyalty schemes and their better grasp of distribution and so on. So I think there's a lot to offer by hotel brands in these other service living categories. So certainly this is, I think, something we're going to see a lot more of from the hotel brands.
Now, we've seen plenty of businesses in the last 2 or 3 years in the hospitality sector and other sectors use public listings as a way to access new sources of capital to further grow their businesses. Plenty of those have happened by SPAC moves in the US, and as we have reported, plenty of them in the hospitality sector have not worked out all that well. But that's not put off everybody, and a Philippine business called Hotel 101 has recently done a SPAC to launch on the US market. They are actually part of a larger Philippine business called Double Dragon, and Hotel 101 is aiming to use this SPAC listing to catapult its growth faster and much more globally. It's interestingly using a model of fractional ownership, which again we've seen have its own problems in the past, but they reckon it's working quite well for them in the Philippines, and they reckon they can take it around the world. So we're interesting to watch how that goes. The other people talking about listing, but not specifically about turning to the US or using the SPAC route, is Motel One, the very well-established, still fast-growing, German-based budget hotel business. But they've just recently realigned the ownership of some of the parts of the business. There's been an exit from one of their long-term supporters who've cashed out. But that stake has been bought by the owners of the Motel One business, which now they say puts them in a position where they've got the option of going to market. That could mean obviously a cash out, percentage cash out, perhaps for the original developers of the Motel One business, but also it could give them another cash injection, which may help spur them to further international growth, and also grow their second brand, the Cloud One, which is just started and interestingly was launched in the US before coming back to the German market. So the public listing route is far from over.
Yeah, if you were to get a Hollywood casting agent to put together an ideal candidate for an interesting, shall we call it, corporate activity in the hotel space, having something which was a SPAC, having something which was is based on the buy a hotel room thing, and having something which is based in an emerging market country, I think, you know, it's interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
To have all of those things together. Look, I like you, Chris. I think, you know, having seen the fate of Guest Invest and similar concepts like it, I'm a little bit sceptical about this, shall we say, and I had a look at the marketing blurb for Hotel 101's property in Madrid.
Right.
They're offering, you can buy one for about 180,000 euros, a figure which is indicative and subject to change according to the small print. But you get 10 free nights, and if they get 100% occupancy, you're going to get a rate of return on your money, which is almost 10%. It does look slightly too good to be true, and there is a moral about things that look too good to be true. But anyway, let's park that there and move on to talk about, I think, a business I have a lot more confidence in, and that's Motel One. And, you know, this is, we talked about this new wave of vertically integrated players last week, and we talked about Citizen M and B&B and how, you know, this is, they're very interesting business models for, in particular, accessing that economy and mid-scale bit of the European market, and how successful they've been by being vertically integrated. And Motel One fits this model very well as well. And I've, you know, it is one of those golden children, I'd suggest, from this new wave. But also, like Citizen M and B&B, I'm rather sceptical about the valuation they're putting on themselves with this 4.1 billion euros valuation off of the stake it's just recently sold. Now, if Motel One is worth 4.1 billion off a revenue of 852 million euros, it's got a multiple of revenue to value, which is almost double that of Whitbread's, and Whitbread's market cap is 6.85 billion, and in 23 it made had sales of 2.6 billion pounds. I just struggle to see how you could say that Motel One is worth nearly twice Whitbread, but it's a good business, probably just a bit topperly priced.
Okay, well, it's time now for our five-star and no-star awards of the week. And
yeah, and we're going to go to the IHIF again, and it's five stars for the optimism of the brand owners and the operators. They've had a very good period, and they look, you know, it looks pretty good. There are some clouds on the horizon, but nothing too serious, I think. And it's no stars for the lack of any obvious catalysts for, the transaction market picking up steam. And I fear, actually, that the second half of this year is really going to be clouded by the US election. I think that's going to be putting a lot of people off making a big commitment.
And on that poignant note, we'll say goodbye for now.